I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to kick off Indie Talks, a series of community conversations about things that matter most. Today we'll talk about Indie's kids, about how we keep them in school and on the path to happy and productive lives. We'll talk about all of this with some great guests. Warren Township School Superintendent Dina Cushenberry, Civic Enterprises President John Bridgeland, and Bob Balfans, co-director of the Everyone Graduates Center and a research scientist at the John Hopkins Center for Social Organization of Schools. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about graduation rates and really Indy's kids. This is the kickoff for the Indy Talks series. And today's No Limits launches a new year of the Indy Talks conversations. This year, the subject is Indy's kids. The show is part of our focus on high school graduation through American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships between public media and the community. We'll be talking today, obviously, about the best way to keep our young people in school and on their way to happy and productive lives. And we're going to be joined in the conversation by some great guests. Dina Cushenberry, who is the Warren Township School Superintendent. Dina, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And by phone, we're going to be talking with John Bridgeland, who is president of Civic Enterprises. That's a Washington public policy firm. John, welcome to the program.
Nice to be with you.
It's good to have you here. And Bob Balfans, who is the co-director of the Everyone Graduate Center, and he is also a research scientist at the Johns Hopkins Center for Social Organization of Schools. Bob, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
Good to have you here. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, I'm going to start with kind of a basic question, but I think that gives us a good starting point. Why is it important that students not drop out? Give me a big picture, and then we're going to drill down from there. I'll start with Bob Balfans.
Sure. The simplest answer to that is there's no work in the 21st century for a high school dropout to support a family on. And if you can't support a family, you can't be really a part of the community. And so it's really the difference between having a shot at a good life and really living in difficult circumstances.
John Bridgeland, I'll toss it to you next. What do you think is the most important reason for young people to stay in school?
Well, I think Bob's right that, you know, a generation ago, a high school diploma or actually less, a majority of jobs, you could find with even less than a high school diploma. But today, and the jobs of the future not only require graduating from high school, but some post-secondary education. The other thing I would say is just the huge costs to individuals who drop out. They're more likely to live in poverty, be unemployed, end up in prison. On welfare, and also completely missing often from the civic lives of their communities. They don't tend to vote, volunteer, participate in the lives of their communities. So it's a tragic cost to them. And finally, the dropout crisis, which reaches almost a million young people a year, costs our nation almost $100 billion in lost productivity and increased social services. So the nation has to take this on.
Dina Cushenberry, I'll reframe it ever so slightly for you. What is the biggest challenge in terms of keeping students in school?
I think, first of all, when kids do not get the credits that they need to graduate, that's one of the problems that certainly doesn't keep kids motivated and moving through school. But on the other hand, I think if we start looking at career, the career centers. We have a Walker Career Center, which really is the hook for some students to keep them in school. You know, kids often don't realize why they have to do the traditional math or why they have to write or why they have to do English. Well, in those environments, it gives them a real world relevance to why they need to know and do those kinds of subjects. So
we have been, this is, as I say, a part of a community-wide conversation, and we had a gathering, an American graduate meeting at WFYI yesterday that generated some advanced questions for this program from our listeners that I'm going to walk through. And the first one is, there's been news coverage this week about rising graduation rates nationwide. What has changed, and why are the rates improving? Bob Balfan, so I'll go with you first on that one.
Sure. Well, I think that the key thing is that this is the beginning to get the payoff of all the work that was done in the middle of the first decade of the 20th century to let people know we really did have a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
At the turn of the 21st century, people thought graduation rates were fine and everyone graduated, and we were able to show through a silent epidemic and some other work locating the dropout crisis that we, in fact, had a crisis. And by the middle part of the decade, people were beginning to mobilize against it. They were trying to reform and improve the worst high schools that produced half the nation's dropouts. They were starting to worry about middle grades. They were worrying about making sure kids had a place to go after high school. So I think we're really showing the fruits of our labors, that we paid attention to it, we started to mobilize, we did something, and now it's starting to pay off. And the one cautionary note in that data is that that progress was not shared evenly across states. Some states moved forward, some states did not. So we're making progress, but it's not across the board yet.
Where are the keep it with you for a second, Bob. Where were the success stories and where are the problem areas?
It really intermixes. I mean, I think Indiana made some modest progress. Tennessee made lots of progress. New York made progress. Other states did not. And it's really, you can really trace it to those that actually mobilized against the issue and those that didn't.
Well, and I'll take a step back from that. Dina Cushenberry, probably a way to look at this also is examining, I imagine, one of the first places we looked at in trying to figure out how to confront this problem is, why do students drop out in the first place? What's the data?
Well, usually it's grades, attendance, and lack of involvement. When students aren't involved, or when they don't have a purpose to be in school, or a connection or a relationship with a teacher, then, you know, the value of education for them sometimes is not there. So what we've tried to do, we've had something called Common Goal 3030, which we use some of that money from the chamber to get a group of students that we believe, starting in their freshman year, might have some difficulty getting through school, and put counselors around them, put people in contact with family, just to support them through. And that was a pretty successful program for us. So that's what we've done thus far.
We are talking about Indy's Kids, American Graduates, and basically the dropout crisis here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, another question we got from yesterday's session, and I'll throw this one to John Bridgeland first, is, as some regions and demographics improve, there continue to be groups who consistently drop out. What are the pockets of greatest resistance? What regions or groups of people are struggling the most?
Yeah, John, it's a good question. And, you know, I think one of the breakthroughs in the middle of the decade was that we discovered there had been years of research on the high school dropout problem, but no one had actually ever listened to the customer, to the dropouts themselves. So we did all across the country. And as Dina mentioned, you know, the leading reason they gave was they didn't see the connection between what they're learning in school and what they wanted to be in life, what the, you know, trajectory toward a career was. So these efforts to connect them through multiple pathways to environments in which they can see the relationships between school and career, absolutely essential. In terms of the dropout problem is disproportionately affecting minority students. You know, nationally across the country now about 78% of the students are graduating from high school on time. But with respect to minorities and those who have limited English proficiency and young people with disabilities, it's often in the, you know, the low 60 percentile. So it's disproportionately affecting them. And that's the graduation gap that Bob referred to that we have to address.
Bob Balfans, can we drill down a little further on that? Are there specific areas or approaches that might yield better results?
Yeah, I mean, well, one of the key drivers we found is simply put, when we put too many needy kids in one school with not enough adults to meet their problems, we have a problem. So it really is poverty that ultimately drives a fair amount of the dropout crisis. And with poverty comes a lot of academic and non-academic needs that need to be met. And we often don't staff or organize our schools against that level of challenge. We sort of think that every kid gets the same supports. Every kid you get your per pupil funding, and if, you know, if the kids need lots of help or little help, that's not really factored into that. So we tend to have a subset of schools that have sort of overwhelming need and are often not organized to effectively address it. So one thing that's been helpful in that has been the advent of early warning systems. Where as early as the sixth grade, we can see that kids that are not coming to school, that are failing their courses, that are getting in trouble, we know that absent intervention, most of those kids will not graduate. But we know in the sixth grade, it's still quite intervenable if we mobilize against it. So by bringing data into schools and getting teams of teachers to work together and bringing in a second shift of adults from places like the United Way and other social service groups and really integrating them into the school, we can organize enough adults against the problem and use data to guide that help to the kids that need it the most.
Bob, I'm going to stay with you for a second. Our governor in this state, Mike Pence, has proposed as part of his budget a school funding formula where all schools would get increases in funding over the next 2 years. But in the second year, schools that hit certain performance criteria, whether they're ranked A or B or enough students passed standardized tests to graduate from school, would get, I think, an additional $64 million to divide amongst themselves. Is that a good or a bad idea based on what you've just told me?
Yeah, I think what's missing from that is I think the ideas of incentive for progress can be powerful, but it has to be matched with an awareness of the degree of difficulty. And so my analogy I use is the Olympics. Any sport in the Olympics, it's both how well you do it and the degree of difficulty. So if you're on the high dive and you do a beautiful swan dive to perfection, you don't end up getting lots of points because that's not so challenging. But if you do a triple reverse backflip with two spins and miss one, you come out better because your degree of difficulty was much higher. And we really need to understand the degree of difficulty schools face and factor that into how we recognize their improvement in performance and also how we mobilize enough resources to the high degree of difficulty schools so they actually have the ability to meet those performance targets.
So what you're saying is really it should be a staggered start to some degree rather than...
And also it should also be used to bring additional resources to the places of the greatest need and then hold them accountable for using those resources well. So if they don't use them well, then there could be consequences. But if we ask people to jump over the high jump, but we put lead weights around their legs before they start, it's not going to work.
And that's why we have
the
complexity index in our title programs, just to make sure that those disadvantaged students do have a equitable start when it comes to the resources that they may need to perform.
We've gotten an email, or actually a Facebook comment, from a listener named Marcia. It says, regardless of what anyone says, it's all in the money. Until we have full-day kindergarten for all students, pre-K and other preschool programs for all at-risk and underserved children, and more and much better special education services for all ages of students, we will continue to lag behind other states and the rest of the industrialized world. We've been hearing otherwise for 8+ years, but we haven't had a governor or a legislature that gives a, I'm going to edit, darn about education in Indiana. These programs have to be funded. That is a fact. Until we spend more to invest in our future, our future will continue to look and be mediocre at best. You have to spend money to make money. Dina Cushenberry, I'll give you real briefly that question. How important is money in all of this, what we spend on education?
Well, first of all, I'd like to just comment on the person that wrote in. Full-day kindergarten would have to be mandated. And, you know, this is the first year that the state has funded full-day kindergarten, and we're hoping that they will continue to do so. What we did notice here in our district was we put title money to have all our schools have full day K. And as they went to first grade, it was the first year our teacher said, wow, these kids are prepared. So we know from a real experience that full day kindergarten does benefit students, and it does help prepare them to have the experiences they need to move forward.
We are talking about graduation rates and really the dropout crisis. Here on No Limits, you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can shoot us a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Dina Cushenberry, who is the Warren Township School Superintendent, John Bridgeland, who is President of Civic Enterprises, and Bob Balfans, who is co-director of the Everyone Graduate Center. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about graduation rates and the dropout crisis as part of the Indie Talk series, where we community conversation about things that matter. My guests today are Dina Cushenberry, who is the Warren Township School Superintendent, John Bridgeland, who is president of Civic Enterprises, a Washington public policy firm, and Bob Balfans, who is co-director of the Everyone Graduates Center. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, or you can shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. We've gotten an email question from a listener, more of a comment from Tracy, who's up in Northwest Indiana. It says, I am a mother of two high school students in Northwest Indiana. Each face individual challenges and problem areas, from teachers being constantly subbed in and out. My daughter is on her third geometry teacher this year, to the dismal building structure quality, roof falling apart, rusty water sitting in halls and desk chairs throughout the building yesterday. Our high school is facing many challenges due to income area. Guest is so correct. Poverty steers the outcome. I wish our students would be able to listen to this discussion. And actually, they can. If they go to WFYI.org and local programs on the radio button, they can listen to this either live or we maintain an archive. And I guess I want to pick up, since this seems to be a persistent theme, Bob Balfans, I'm going to ask you the same variation of the same question I asked Dina right before the break, which is, how much is money a part of this?
It's part but not all of the story. So we need to be able to mobilize resources, which is both dollars but also person power. Really what keeps kids in schools is a connection with an adult who they know both cares about them but can actually help them solve problems. And so part of the challenge is making sure that, you know, teachers in school can do some of that, but also bringing in this idea of the second shift of adults through various organizations to help do the things if the kids aren't there to say, where were you today? We missed you. Did you get your homework done? I know you're having trouble with Mr. Brown. Let's talk about it. That sort of nagging and nurturing might take just 30 seconds, but it's 30 seconds over many days.
How does that second shift work? Bob, I mean,
well, people have done it in different ways, but the national service organizations is one way to bring them into the school. United Way is a good umbrella organization that's really organizing, trying to organize a million volunteers for schools in an organized fashion. Various other local agencies can help provide that additional person power, and really using things like the early warning indicators can help you figure out which kids need that additional adult support. Now, that said, money still matters in certain areas, so it's both things are important.
John?
Please, yes, John.
Yeah, I would add that, you know, the United States, among OECD countries, spends more per pupil on education than, you know, many other countries, so it's not all about money, obviously. And I think this notion of collective impact, interestingly, Bob and I were featured in a report a number of years ago, Richmond, Indiana, that had brought together 30 partners from government, education, business, the community, that came together to coordinate really from kind of cradle to career. And as the person who wrote in a question mentioned, that, you know, instituted kindergarten, they had early grades literacy programs, started a ninth grade academy, an intensive credit recovery program. Obviously, many of these efforts do require resources, but at the same time, they drew on resources from the community in a holistic approach to get good data, to have clear goals, and actually Richmond boosted its high school graduation rates over 6 years, more than 20 percentage points. So there are examples out there of communities using creativity to make limited resources go further.
We are talking about graduation rates and the dropout crisis here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Alyssa, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. Your question, please.
Not really a question, just a comment. When my daughter was younger, we lived in the Nashville, Tennessee area, and we read reports in which they were spending less money on education than they were on tourism. And when we moved in back into the Indianapolis area, saw a great increase in spending on education. And I can tell you firsthand that it does make a big difference in how much money is spent, not only on the kids, but in the mentality of the teachers as well.
Thank you very much for the comment, Alyssa, and thanks for listening. Well, Dina Cushenberry, maybe the way to reframe this, rather than, you know, take it out of accountant speak, as it were, and say money in some ways is also in our culture, our society, the way we prioritize things as well. Is it that we have to place a greater priority on education, and particularly in making sure that all young people have access to the education they need?
Well, as you might know, Warren Township received the Race to the Top grant. And as we started looking at how we will educate this next generation of students, we started with our kindergartners, and in 13 years, they will graduate. It will be 2025. So what does that look like? And we started challenging the conversation with, what does it take to educate this generation of students? So we've said to teachers, how do we educate this generation and not ours? So we're starting those conversations, and with our Race to the Top grant, we will continue to explore how we will move forward with educating our students.
How do you plan? $28 million is not an insignificant sum, obviously. How do you plan to use those funds?
Well, currently we have written that we'll look at personalizing the education for our students. We'll upgrade the current curriculum to Common Core. We'll add a lot more professional development for our teachers. We will extend the learning opportunities for students from the end of the day through the week, through the weekends. So anytime, we will also look at alternative pathways for graduation through virtual learning, allowing students to learn at their own pace, at their own time. We want to look at outside of the classroom learning, where, you know, students will have a more rigorous and relevant learning opportunity in companies. So we will certainly look for different organizations and companies to work with us to better help our kids be productive outside and see what that looks like. And we'll also have a sports media production studio that we're looking at. And most importantly, the third component is our positive behavior support systems for students. We believe that right now we're looking at CORE, civility, order, respect, and excellence, and how we bring that into our school district and how we every day talk to students, teachers, and our community about those beliefs. So that will be a part of what we do with our $28.5 million.
Bob Balfans, obviously Warren Township said that to qualify for the Race to the Top grant showed some innovation. Are there other areas, other places or school districts or schools, specific schools in this country that provide us some examples of what can be done to meet this crisis, perhaps without $28 million, that there are low-cost ways
to attack the
problem?
A really great example is that there's on a Frontline PBS a special called Middle Grades Moment, people should look up. And it's about a PS a middle school in Bronx, New York, that took the early warning indicator research and basically used that to organize teacher teams and administrators and counselors who every week look at kids that are having attendance, behavior, and course performance problems and organize to make sure that every one of those kids has an adult supporter. And so all they really did is they reorganized a little bit of their internal funding, turned in some school aides for another counselor, but essentially moved around existing dollars and used that to create a web of adult support for kids in need, tracking data. It's a very good effect, and that's so I really recommend people check out Middle Grades Moment. See an example of a school that really made a difference on a shoestring, which shows that it can be done.
If there's one, you know, sort of universal thing, and I'm asking, keeping the questions with Bob Balfans because I know he's got to leave us here in just a second. Bob, is there one small thing that schools all across the country, one thing that they could do that would make an immediate difference?
I mean, not to beat a dead horse, but it would be to really know which of their kids are missing a month or more of school, which of their kids are getting in sustained mild misbehavior, which of their kids are failing math and English on a very real-time basis, and having a system in place to design some interventions against that, to monitor those interventions for their effectiveness, if they're not working, to change them, and to really organize teams of adults to keep track and support those kids.
Thank you very much for joining us, Bob. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Certainly. We are talking about graduation rates here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Tony, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Tony Lux. I'm a colleague of Dina's with the Indiana Urban Schools Association.
Oh.
Superintendent of Maryville Schools in
Good.
Northwest Indiana.
Well, welcome to the program. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. My sister and I were just heading out to lunch, and we turned on the station, and we heard this great conversation going on, and wanted to contribute a little bit.
Certainly. Certainly. Do you have a question, comment, or?
Well, it's a comment. We're a 80% minority school population, and with 60% free and reduced lunch kids, our high school is just under 2,300 students. We have a 90% graduation rate. Our African-American students have a 93% graduation rate.
Wow.
And there are some very concrete programs that I think contribute a great deal towards getting those kinds of results, similar to what I've heard discussed already. But the building of relationships with kids is absolutely essential, getting kids to believe that they can be successful. But that has to be followed up with credit recovery programs, homework recovery programs, opportunities.
If I could jump in for a second,
sure.
Tony, when you say credit recovery programs, homework recovery programs, what do you mean? For our listeners who are not in the education world, what are those?
That, for example, if students don't do their homework,
mm-hmm.
Just not doing your homework isn't acceptable. They get assigned during lunchtime to go and finish their homework. Failure is not an option.
Mm-hmm.
Allowing students to get away with not doing things is not an option. They come to understand that they will be held accountable to do that. Credit recovery, we have as part of our alternative program after school hours. Kids can retake classes there in addition to their regular school schedule. We're in a trimester schedule. If a student fails the first trimester of algebra, they're immediately rescheduled to retake that the immediate next trimester. And that's a huge burden on our guidance counselors, but that's done. Those schedules are rearranged every trimester, so students can't go through long periods of time without retaking classes and continuing to work until they master it.
Tony, can I keep you on the line for just a second? Because I actually want to toss some of this stuff out. You know, when you talk about the burdens on guidance counselors, most of our talk about education, and particularly in the political arena, often focuses on teachers and their qualifications. But you make a good point. It's an entire system that has to work to educate a child. Do we not pay enough attention to the other parts of that system that have a vital role? I'll toss that one to Dina Cushenberry. The two of you can talk superintendent to superintendent for a moment.
Okay. You know, when we as a district started looking at what we needed to do to improve student achievement, we went with the 8-step process. Dr. Hinckley brought this to us probably 10 years ago. And so every 3 weeks, we look at students' information. We look at their data. We look at what indicators they were successful in. We look at how the teacher's teaching, what are they modeling? Are they doing those kinds of things? We also, from that information, decide if a kid needs enrichment, remediation, or tutoring just to, keep those skills up. And then we monitor through walkthroughs and those things for our teachers. But our counselors do a great job, but our teachers also build those relationships to make sure that students are successful. So those are some things that we do in our district.
And Tony, I'll reframe it ever so slightly for you. Are there ways that, we focus an awful lot on teacher training now and all of that. Are there other parts of the education staffing system that we need to think about providing greater training and support for? I mean, I can't imagine that your guidance counselors would have been thinking 20 years ago that was something like what you're talking about would have been part of their job responsibilities.
Right. Intervention and students, they bring their whatever challenges they have in their personal lives, they bring to school every day. And those challenges, they need support, they need intervention. If they're expected to focus on academics while they've got some personal trauma or challenge in their home life, students have to have an outlet for that. They have to be able to feel that someone cares, that they have support. And that's part of their education so that they can focus on academics. And that is something that, unfortunately, we see too little of in our legislators when they only want to focus on whether or not the teacher is getting good test scores, and they don't want to hear about those kind of support programs, and they don't even consider those social workers and counselors as part of an integral part of educating underprivileged and students.
Well, Tony, thank you very much for joining us and for taking part of your lunch hour to talk with us. We'll let you get back to that, but I really do appreciate you calling in and listening.
Thanks.
Thank you. You've got a great program.
Thank you.
I just want to say hi.
Hi.
Thanks much.
Okay.
Care,
Tony.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Hey, John.
Yes, John Bridgeland, please.
It's interesting you raise counselors because when you look across the system, I think they're underutilized and they're not given the kind of focus that they deserve. So we actually reached out working with the College Board and did a nationally representative of school counselors in middle school and high school all across the United States. And what we heard from them is that, first, they believe they have a unique role to play in the system. Mm-hmm. Unlike any other educator, they stay with kids across grades and, throughout their careers. They understand what their social and emotional gaps are and challenges. They understand the challenges they face in family life in ways that, it's far more difficult, I think, for a teacher that has a student for 1 year to address. And so the encouraging news is that the vast majority of school counselors don't want to be a jack of all trades. They don't want to be pulled in a million different directions and have to proctor tests and do administrative tasks. They really do want to focus on holding high expectations and helping young people not only graduate from high school, but learn what's required to get into college and have a successful career. Interestingly, the majority of them also said that they're willing to be held accountable in a system for things like graduation rates and see a direct relationship between the things they can do in schools and that success. So there's a movement afoot to focus the nation's attention on our school counselors and to provide them the supports that they deserve.
We are talking about graduation rates and the dropout crisis here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Dina Cushenberry, who is the Warren Township School Superintendent, John Bridgeland, who is president of Civic Enterprises, a Washington public policy firm. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today really as the kickoff for the 2013 Indie Talk series about Indie's kids and graduation rates. Today's No Limits launches a new year of the Indie Talks conversations. This year, the subject is Indie's Kids. The show is part of our focus on high school graduation through American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships between public media and the community. My guests are Dina Cushenberry, who is the Warren Township School Superintendent, and John Bridgeland, who is the president of Civic Enterprises, a Washington public policy firm. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Neil who says, are any of your panelists familiar with Communities in Schools? This is a national program that has a track record of improving graduation rates. This program utilizes community assets to meet the non-academic needs of the kids and allowing teachers. I'll throw that one to you, John.
We sure do. Communities in Schools is, I think, one of the most outstanding examples of a community-based organization that's working in school districts all across the United States, and really to take the early warning data that Bob mentioned that we know, again, as early as middle school, that if a young person they're missing more than 10 or 15 or even 20 days of school, or they have more than two behavior infractions, or they're falling behind in reading and math. Those individuals, represent potentially the class that will drop out, and we need to intervene against that. And Communities in Schools mobilizes the tutors and mentors, but also the deeper level supports. There are a number of students that have undiagnosed problems or disabilities or, traumatic life events. And Communities in Schools workers work with these kids one-on-one and give them the intensive supports in schools, after school, that really are making a difference all across the country. They're also being paired with programs like City Year, that's a national service program that mobilizes teams of peers who have graduated from college and are such great role models for these young people in schools. And they work in partnership with teachers, and they greet every student by name, early in the morning. They understand what their interests are so they can connect what they're learning in school to what they want to be in life. And they often usher them into after-school programs and even sometimes, walk them home through unsafe neighborhoods to their families. So the role of people power and the role of organizations like Communities in Schools and City Year are really fundamental to the progress we're making in addressing the high school dropout challenge.
Well, it sounds like, I'll throw this to both of you, it does sound like a large part of this challenge. What I'm hearing as consistent themes here is early detection is really important, in terms of paying attention to certain problem indicators, intervening quickly and fairly decisively. But it sounds like there's another part that's almost outside of the schools itself, the community involvement piece as well, getting other groups. Every one of you at different points during this program has talked about that second shift or other people other than the professional educators who need to be focused on this. Dina Cushenberry, how important is that?
Well, the community is key. That's why we're looking to have different partnerships and relationships with our community. So as our students leave our high school, if they choose not to go to college, they will have relationships with people in the community that they can, go to for possible employment or mentoring or tutoring. And yesterday I was in Washington, D.C., College Board program, and we talked a little bit a few minutes ago about counselors, but they had a young man who was from Dallas, and, he talked about the importance of his teacher. We talked about the counseling shortage, and he said, I don't know that we need more counselors. I think that we need better relationships with teachers. He said, the teachers that I've had and I have good relationships with, those are the ones and those are the people that I want to talk to, because those are the people that I see each and every day who make a difference in my life. So, you know, there's a two-prong with that piece and with the community. So,
you know, I'll just add
John
to that,
Bridgeland,
John,
yeah,
and Dina, it's so interesting when we talk to the dropouts all across the country. One of the key, when we asked them, well, what would have helped you stay in school? And many of them cited, you know, just one caring, loving adult in the school. It could be a teacher, it could be a counselor, it could be a coach who knew their name, knew their story, knew what they were interested in. There was this one girl from Philadelphia, and we asked her, what did you want to be when you were growing up? And she said, I wanted to be an astrophysicist. And we said, what? And she said, an astrophysicist inspired by the space program. And later in the discussion, this is a 16-year-old girl, we asked her what she was doing, her head dipped down, and she said, I'm working the streets. I mean, she literally was a prostitute on the streets of Philadelphia. Mm. And how someone goes from having those kinds of dreams and ambitions and, you know, dying to see the connections between her interest in science and what she was learning in the classroom. And for her, no one helped her make that connection. And so I think a part of the challenge is exactly what Dina said, which is adults in the schools and then those drawn from the community, including business leaders who can do job shadowing and mentoring and show relationships between learning and career, is absolutely essential.
John, I've got to ask the question. I mean, so far, a lot of the discussion about this subject, the dropout crisis, you know, and when you make the argument for it, it has to be done in economic terms, the lost productivity, the, you know, the things. When you tell a story like that about a 16-year-old girl who, in some ways, her life has just been destroyed by something like this, does it bother you at all that you have to frame it in economic terms rather than in the human terms?
You know, it's funny you should say that, John, because this issue was not on the national map until we listened to and lifted up the voices of young people all across America who had made this tragic decision to fall off a path that they would regret for the rest of their lives. And it was their voices that generated the Time cover story, Dropout Nation, and the two Oprah Winfrey shows. And in fact, it's interesting, Shelbyville, Indiana, was the poster school for Dropout Nation. And I've been to Shelbyville 3 times and met with that extraordinary superintendent, Dave Adams, and the team there. You know what they did? They mobilized the community. They created an early warning system room where the teachers, the administrators, the counselors meet, and they have kids in the green, yellow, and red zone. And those kids who are falling in the red zone, you know, they mobilize all sorts of supports to help them. And I'm just so happy to report that Bob Balfance and I actually, in this year's annual update to the nation, which we'll issue in a month, feature Shelbyville, Indiana, for having made double-digit gains and boosting high school graduation rates, and has gone from, you know, poster school for Dropout Nation to an exemplar of what can be done in this country. And I think, honestly, a big part of this was, yeah, sure, the economic case is powerful. Sure, the national security case that Colin Powell and Connie Rice and Joel Klein have all made, very powerful. But ultimately, if we don't listen to the needs and voices of young people and figure out creative ways to help them stay on track, none of those larger arguments are really going to matter. It's got to connect to the reality on the ground. And that's why I've loved hearing all the responses that Dina has given, because it connects so beautifully to the research that we did around what young people need.
That's great.
We are talking about graduation rates and the dropout crisis here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Abby, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. Your question, please.
I just had a comment. My stepson had a tragic event in about 4 or 5 years ago in his mother's home, and the school counselor who has been with him for the last 4 or 5 years really helped pull him out. And try as we might, me and his father couldn't get his grades up. But I really think what you guys are saying about the community helping out, the counselor was instrumental. And she's one counselor for a school of 250 kids, and she's only there 2 days a week. So I think we need to get more counselors in schools, basically.
Dina Cushenberry, you're smiling while Abby's talking. Thank you very much for the call, Abby.
You're welcome.
Dina, you were smiling. Was that a smile of agreement or?
Definitely a smile of agreement. I'm on the Jane Pauley board, and you know, some of the conversation that I had with them, our last meeting was, what are the services, the mental health services that we have in our community, and you know, what are the safety nets that we have? And one safety net for dropout is our adult education program, which certainly helps kids with their GED and credit recovery. But you know, more and more we'll have to think about what our community safety nets are for kids, like the one our other talked about. So.
Oh,
yeah, I want to build on that, John. First, what Abby said is exactly right. It's not been since the 1958 National Defense Education Act, you know, in the right on the heels of Sputnik, that the country took a true investment in our nation's counselors seriously. And that story that Abby shared is something you could imagine. If I were to place my bets on school systems, I would certainly do a much better job supporting counselors. But to Dina's point, too, these dropouts also cited extraordinary life events that were causing them to drop out. You know, mm-hmm. young boys who were 16, who literally were the caretakers, the heads of household mm-hmm. for their families, taking care of ill grandmothers and parents. Young girls who had the courage to have their baby but didn't see the means to raise a child and stay in school. And when we looked at their grades, by the way, John and Dina, these young girls who had children, the vast majority of them were doing extraordinarily well in school. So it was just the fact of this life event that occurs, and they don't see the means to do it all, causes them to leave school. And so these community-based and school-based systems that provide basically communities and schools to help these young kids, particularly those with life events, is, I think, critical.
Do we give teachers adequate training? Normally don't do this, but I'm going to share a personal story. I'm a college teacher in my other life, and I realize it's a different set of challenges, but similar. I remember a few years ago, I'm going to alter a couple of the details here so that I don't give the student's identity away. I had a student walk in while I was giving a test, student I'd had a couple of semesters before, who walked into the middle of the classroom and, you know, said that she really needed to talk to me because she was thinking about killing herself. And, you know, I've been trained in many, many things, but suicide prevention counseling was not one of them at that point. Yet from what I am hearing, that is a far more common occurrence, not in that specific case, where you're talking about major life issues. And do we prepare teachers well enough to deal with those things? John Bridgeland.
No, I think we don't, and I think generally the country's missed the mark on social and emotional learning and development, and I think there's been so much emphasis on academic. It's so interesting when you look at those school systems that are really focused like a laser on also teaching social and emotional learning. The results show that it boosts academic achievement significantly, and I think it was Dina who mentioned, you know, the importance of discipline and working well with others and, you know, making sure you're not bullying or being bullied, character, grit, determination. You know, increasingly we're seeing evidence that all these things matter, and I think the nation's going to have to do a much better job, and maybe the race to the top model is a good one, to spark, you know, innovation around teacher training, counselor training, training for administrators, you know, to spot early signs of trouble and to make sure that those who are competent in the community to actually deal with those problems are, you know, mobilized quickly as something as dramatic as, you know, suicide prevention mm-hmm. to something as simple as, a home-school dynamic that's not ideal.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about graduation rates and the dropout crisis here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Angel, welcome to the program.
Hi, my name is Angel, and I'm a high school teacher in a suburb outside of Indianapolis.
Yes.
And my comment goes back to a little bit earlier when you guys were discussing the importance and value of relationships mm-hmm. with students. And I think there's something, and obviously relationships that you make with students is extremely important. And I can tell you, I mean, I've been teaching for nearly 20 years now, and I can't tell you how many students' lives I've been able to impact and been able to help as a result of being able to create those relationships. But unfortunately, with all of these economic problems and issues that we've been having, schools have, as you've noticed, have been one of the very first chopping blocks, as opposed to being reserved for one of the last. And what that has done, at least in my district, and I'm certain that it's happened all around, is that when we've had millions of dollars in budget cuts, one of the first things that's happened is we've had to cut back on staff. And as a result, instead of seeing maybe 30 students for six classes a day, now I'm seeing closer to 40 students for six classes a day. And unfortunately, when you have nearly 200 kids a day, it's really difficult to be able to create those intimate, close relationships, to be able to know where the kids are coming from and what kind of problems that they're having.
John Bridgeland, I hear you. Thanks very much for the call, Angel.
Yeah.
Murmuring as Angel was talking.
Yeah, I was just thinking of New York City. You know, I talk about large, impersonal learning environments in big urban schools, and they've had great success because they actually the mayor, even when it was in a tough fiscal climate, made education a priority, invested in education, took these large, urban, impersonal schools and broke them up into 200 smaller, more personalized learning environments with, you know, multiple pathways to success. And as a result, you know, we were able to feature New York City as, you know, making, again, double-digit gains in graduation rates, but more, preparing young people for college and career. I also think we've missed the boat a little bit on kind of a high-quality career and technical education system in the country, and feel like given the depths of the dropout problem and how much young people want to see connections to school and career, we need to bring that back. Final point, when you look at Finland and South Korea and countries around the world that are educating, you know, in a very sophisticated way their populations, they make a huge investment in teachers. I think we don't pay teachers enough. We don't teach, you know, treat them as the extraordinary public servants and professionals that they are. And until we do that, you know, we know that there's no substitute for a high-quality teacher who has a strong, engaging relationship with a student. You know, we're going to continue to struggle.
Well, I'm afraid that is going to have to be the last word on what has been a really fascinating conversation. I would like to thank all of my guests. Dina Cushenberry, who is the Warren Township School Superintendent, just won a huge grant in the Race to the Top for $28 million. Dina, thank you very much for joining us. I hope we can get you back sometime.
Absolutely.
John Bridgeland, who's the president of Civic Enterprises. That's a Washington public policy firm. John, thank you very much for spending this time with us.
Nice to be with you and Dina. Thank you.
Hope we can bring you back. We also were joined earlier in the program by Bob Balfans, who is co-director of the Everyone Graduates Center. We will be back starting next week. We're going to be twice a week. Tuesday, we will be talking about gun violence and gun control. I'm John Kroll. Thank you for spending this time with us.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.